Welcome in, everyone, to the 67th episode of the Deep Dive Dynasty podcast.
Getting close.
We, as always, are your hosts, Toby and Colin. Toby, how have you been doing, man?
I'm just getting so excited for August. Mm-hmm. It is marked in my calendar. I'm catching 50 passes a day just to be ready.
Just to get prepared. Yeah, I saw that this upcoming week, there are three teams that are starting their training camp, and the Steelers is one of them. You know, we got Hard Knocks coming. We got a lot of fun stuff coming. It's time to get into the next season. Regardless of what platform you're listening to us on, make sure you subscribe to us. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, we'd really appreciate if you left us a review. Beyond that, you can find us on Twitter to keep up with every one of our episodes and everything we got going on. We are going to, this week, be finishing off our divisional deep dive series, and we will be doing so with the NFC North. We have purposely left this division, hoping that, you know, we might have some clarity on this Aaron Rodgers situation, and... Nope. It did not happen. But let's start off with that top team off the board, the Green Bay Packers. Looking at their head coach, their offensive coordinator, we know what this offense will be, even if Aaron Rodgers is gone, let's say. Matt LaFleur knows this offense. He's going to run it the same way, I believe, regardless of which quarterback is in. So there's not a lot to note, I would say, in terms of the head of this team. We just have to get into the real meat of it, which is Aaron Rodgers going to be this team's quarterback?
I believe he will.
Yeah, we don't know any more than you know, unless you may even know more if reports come out in the next days. We're recording this on Monday, so if there's some big crazy news, then as of this point, we do not know if it's Aaron Rodgers. And just like we were talking about last week with the Saints, you kind of have to do two sets of projections on this team, because how I view all of the weapons, all of the players on this team with Jordan Love is very different than how I view them with Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers is pretty clearly a top 15 quarterback in any offense in the league. I think the bigger question for fantasy, because that is just a big question mark right now, is Jordan Love potentially a good buy, given that there is a potential opportunity for him to very quickly have a surge in value if Aaron Rodgers doesn't play or goes anywhere else?
I'm trying to think of teams where Aaron Rodgers could go that would up his stock. And teams that, if Aaron Rodgers went there, stock would go down?
Well, I think most teams would be down. Just because whenever you have an elite asset that's been elite for a long time...
Change is a variant you probably dislike.
Change is not a good thing. There are good situations he could end up in, though. Like, if he supplants Darnold and goes to Carolina. Like, we've seen reports, for example, you know, this is a little bit of a tangent, of the fact that the Eagles are interested in Deshaun Watson if all of the legal stuff goes away. Yeah. And Deshaun Watson and Aaron Rodgers are kind of in the same scenario, in that there are teams like Carolina or Philadelphia with Jalen Hurts that, sure, they might be okay with their quarterback right now, but they're not going to forego these elite options to keep their like decent upshot type of guy. So I think someone like Aaron Rodgers or Deshaun Watson, assuming all the legal stuff is gone, comes on the market, there's a ton of teams that could go for it. And, you know, with Aaron Rodgers, we've seen a lot of talk about potentially Denver, but I think the minute that Aaron Rodgers becomes available, there's at least 10 teams, probably more like 14 or 15, that are like, okay, yeah, we can trade from Goff and go to Aaron Rodgers. Yeah. Like, there are tons of teams that are willing to move on from their decent quarterback to an elite one. So there is a ton of spots he could go to. Somewhere like Denver, I don't think is a bad situation for him to be in. But overall, I don't think there's a situation where I would value him higher than him just going back to Green Bay, where we know he's going to produce.
True. And he's with Adams, man.
Mm-hmm, of course. So yeah, back to Jordan Love. He's gone. We're done talking about Aaron Rodgers. How much do you want Jordan Love?
I want him a decent amount. They drafted him 26th overall. He's a first rounder. Green Bay spent that pick when they did not need a quarterback because they really believed in him as a prospect. It was not that they needed a quarterback right then and there. They chose Jordan Love because they really believe in him. So at the bare minimum, he's going to get a couple of years of chances in Green Bay. Mm-hmm. So again, it's playing that game of, if Aaron Rodgers does come back, that's when I try and go and target Jordan Love. When people are like, oh, Rodgers is back. Because right now, I think your more savvy owners are holding on to Love, knowing that there's a chance he's starting week one. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a world where that happens. And I think you want to try and grab him when that outcome is not seen by everyone in your league.
So I don't know if I disagree with you, because in the scenario that Rodgers signs a somewhat long-term contract, then yeah. Jordan Love is locked into a wasted spot on your team for a while. I think
that's true.
Right now, regardless of course, owners are aware that that possibility exists, that he could be the starter, but you are right now buying him at a discount, whereas there is that opportunity. His price right now won't be as low as it would be if Aaron Rodgers signed,
true.
But it's still a bit lower. And I would say in any scenario other than Aaron Rodgers signing a big contract, I think there's a good chance that he just reports to camp. I'm fine with buying Jordan Love at his price right now, knowing that if he only has to sit 1 year, then I've got a guy that can step in. And I got to talk about, I really, really, really did not like Jordan Love out of college. I think he was a terrible prospect. I don't expect him to succeed at the NFL. He has so many issues to me in terms of just reading defenses and making smart decisions.
I remember us both being shocked on draft day when the pick came in.
Mm-hmm. As was pretty much everybody, yeah. Especially considering the team that drafted him.
Yeah.
But he is the type of player that's going to put up a good amount of fantasy points. He can use his legs, and the way he, you know, throws the ball, how he operates, is a downfield passer, almost like a Jameis Winston. That's the type of impact I could see. And Jameis Winston, sure, played himself out of a starting job, as I could easily see Jordan Love doing, but he also was putting up crazy fantasy points whenever he was in there. So that's the mold I see Jordan Love in. And I'm still willing to go get him now because he could be in that Jalen Hurts mold for me, where if he starts putting up points, I can just take those fantasy points. And if I still view him as a risky guy who hasn't leveled up like crazy, then I'll move him some point during his first starting season when everyone else just sees the fantasy points, but maybe are not as focused on the high number of interceptions he may be throwing or whatever.
Yeah.
So that's basically how I view Jordan Love right now, but I definitely am willing to go get him. Then you've got Davante Adams, who all of these receivers, their value, as I said, is going to be tied to Aaron Rodgers. I do think, as you said, Aaron Rodgers coming back is the most likely scenario, but might not be for that long. Davante Adams is my number one wide receiver. Assuming that happens, I expect him to outproduce everyone again. And if you think back to the Brent Hundley year, Adams has shown, especially considering he's even gotten better since that year, like 3 years ago, he's still going to produce even with someone like Jordan Love. Mm-hmm. I do think regardless, he's going to be a very good wide receiver one.
Adams is the alpha. Huge possibility he finishes wide receiver one in fantasy.
Mm-hmm,
totally. This next year alone. So yeah.
He's definitely my favorite wide receiver. Then you've got Alan Lazard and Marquise Valdes-Scantling, who have been the number two and three the last couple of years. They're still there. They're still like bottom of the roster type guys in Dynasty. The problem with them, even though they will have some production this year, is that there just isn't much of a ceiling there. I think even if Davante Adams goes down, I'm not hugely pumped about these guys, even though they would see a higher target share. There just isn't enough ceiling for me to really be targeting these two, when instead I could be going for guys from other teams.
I think Lazard is a better all-around player than MVS.
Mm-hmm. His role is better for fantasy,
I think
too.
His role is better for fantasy, and I just don't trust MVS. His consistency is inconsistent.
Yeah.
So there's almost no point in time when I'm targeting MVS, because I would rather pay up to get Lazard, because I think the price you're paying is going to be worth it.
Yeah, that's fair.
And that last wide receiver, Amari Rodgers, an exciting new draft pick, shares the same name as his quarterback, maybe. And we at Deep Dive Dynasty liked the tape of Amari Rodgers.
Uh-huh. He doesn't have the explosive athleticism of a guy who can truly level up and be an elite wide receiver one. But what he does, what he did on Clemson, and what he'll do for the Packers, regardless of what scheme or quarterback is throwing him the ball, is be that very reliable underneath type target who's a good route runner, is very smart. He's the type of guy who will build good rapport with his quarterback. So I think although he's not the ceiling play, he's a very good floor play, especially when you consider, I don't think either of us see Lazard or MVS as being like very locked in guys at that number two spot.
Yeah, that's true.
They really don't have any other wide receivers to note, I would say, under that. There's some other deep shot guys, but no one that you really are looking at for Dynasty. But at running back, there's definitely some names worth talking about. Aaron Jones, we thought he was maybe going to leave this offseason, but he returns to Green Bay on a four-year, $48 million contract. He is that type of player that is getting to the age where you think, okay, maybe he's going to start slowing down. He's 26, but I mean, he just got a four-year deal right now.
I expect his role to just increase next year, and I don't think his health will decrease because of it. That's so hard to say.
Yeah, you got to think, though, like 2 years of very good productions fairly locked in. I don't agree that his role will increase. I think a lot of what we saw from Jamal Williams will be eaten up by A.J. Dillon.
I totally think A.J. Dillon's going to play Jamal Williams. Absolutely. I think A.J. just might need a bit more integration into the offense. Having said that, he himself showed flashes. Mm-hmm. And it's only so long that an athlete like that can be sidelined.
And realistically, Aaron Jones is playing as a starter. He's not playing as a McCaffrey-level bell cow.
Yes.
But he doesn't have that much room to get more
work. That's
he's,
fair.
He's in the high teens for rushing's law. He's out there for every third down, pretty much. And I would expect that to continue because A.J. Dillon doesn't excel as a receiver.
Yeah.
So either way, I think Aaron Jones is a locked-in running back one. But A.J. Dillon's very interesting to me now because I do think, despite last year, again, he's a player I didn't love that much out of the draft. He impressed me a little bit with his receiving ability last year in limited work.
Yeah.
And he just looked a little bit quicker with his feet on the field than he did back in college that I think I have a little more excitement for him. And when you're just looking at like player types, he is the fairly ideal number two Thunder to Aaron Jones's Lightning. Like you can have that Kamara, Latavius Murray type roles between these two guys. And that's basically the two roles I expect them to both have. And Latavius Murray clearly has a pretty useful role in that yep. offense. They also drafted in the seventh round, Kylan Hill, who is someone that I liked a decent amount, but
with seventh round running backs, it's just so hard to say, I love his tape. He seems like he can do well in the offense. When you see that seventh round, it almost always means that they're doing nothing for at least a year and potentially nothing for their career.
Well, it's just injury dependent at this point. He's going to be the third guy on the depth chart. And if both A.J. Dillon and Aaron Jones are healthy, he's not going to be on the field. He's going to have an Eno Benjamin type seventh round rookie season. But I would say either one of them goes down and you're going to start to get that opportunity for Kylan Hill. So I don't think he's a bad shot, but it's injury or bust, I would say, for this guy. Then at the tight end position, you've got the emergent Robert Tonyan from last year.
The touchdown machine.
Yeah, just pretty much came out of nowhere and established himself as a pretty reliable target.
Yep.
Somehow ended up as the tight end four last year.
It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, buoyed by touchdowns, of course, and came on more and more as the season went on. But one thing that's just nuts to look at is from week 11 to week 17, so 7 weeks. He scored 6 touchdowns, and he never had a 2-touchdown game. It's just 1 touchdown, 1 touchdown, yeah. 1 touchdown.
Rodgers trusted him.
Definitely. He was a very reliable red zone weapon, and even though he wasn't getting targeted that heavily, they were able to scheme him so open that when he was getting targets, a lot of those touchdowns aren't just little short passes to the end zone. It's like
40-yard tosses occasionally,
and you're like, how is he that open? That doesn't feel possible. He actually did prove to me that he's a pretty good athlete. I do think he can continue it into next year. And these are the type of guys that you take that shot on halfway through the season, and they really can provide a lot of dynasty value. I don't think he's at 27, someone that I expect to have, you know, 7 or 8 more years to his career. But as long as this offense is still the potent offense it is, I'm very happy to go after him. I would say that this is someone that is fairly Aaron Rodgers dependent to me. You throw Jordan Love in there, and I'm not that excited to have Robert Tonyan as my tight end one.
Yeah, couldn't agree more with that. You throw Jordan Love in, I begin to worry not just about Adams, but I find almost all the wide receivers untouchable, and tight end Tonyan, no. I'm doing a dart throw somewhere else with a lower price.
Yeah, for right now, if it's Jordan Love, I want Davante Adams and the running backs, and maybe Jordan Love, and that's about it.
Yep.
Beneath Tonyan, you do have a Jay Sternberger who lost his job to Robert Tonyan. Maybe he's got some upside left over. He was a third-round pick a couple years ago. Maybe if Tonyan gets hurt, he'll step into a role. We'll see. And then beyond him, you've got someone that feels like he's just been around for so long.
Mercedes Lewis.
And
super cool guy, but don't put him on your dynasty roster.
No.
He is too old. Yes. That is it. Sorry, Mercedes. But
no, it's
too
all
old,
true.
My guy.
Next up, we will move to the second place in the division, and that actually kind of surprised me, because for some reason, when I look back at last year, I think of Minnesota being better than the Chicago Bears, who are going to be second up here. They went 8-8, and at head coach, you have Matt Nagy. And at this point, I would say it is pretty easy to see that Matt Nagy is a very good theoretical coach, as in I think he can scheme up good plays on paper. I think he can create a creative offense and can design people open in a good way. You've seen it in previous years with someone like Tariq Cohen, where he could just manufacture touches and let the explosiveness do the work. But in the other aspects of being a coach, I'm not sure if Matt Nagy is very competent at this point.
You know how black holes kind of consume light? I feel like this man...
That is what they do.
Eliminates charisma from a room. Where where there is, you know, stuff to cheer for, it just kind of is. And like, you know, I say it in jest, but I don't think the troops rally around this guy too much. There's obviously people asking for Nagy's job, but... Mm-hmm.
But a couple largely years ago, haters.
Yeah, they're 13-3.
Yeah,
you know,
and that was Trubisky's rookie season. They have an explosive year. Trubisky's in the Pro Bowl, and Matt Nagy's considered one of the like the
God
best.
Sent.
Yeah, an amazing coaching hire, and how quickly he fit.
I think if he puts in Dalton to start the year, which is totally likely, it's going to be a frustrating year for Bears fans. And I think if they put in Fields Week One, it's going to be a much more profitable experience.
Yeah, I would agree that Justin Fields is his path to potentially having that type of prolific offense. That being said, I think Andy Dalton is the best quarterback he's had to work with so far, because I think he's better than Foles and better than Trubisky.
Yeah, maybe not for fantasy purposes, but in terms of an all-in-all asset.
Yes, as a quarterback in the NFL, I think Dalton is definitely better than those two. Justin Fields, as soon as he comes in, will be one of those type of rookies that, because he has such a good rushing floor, will be very useful for fantasy, even if he is not a prolific passer right away, which I think he absolutely can be. I definitely am a huge fan of Justin Fields. I could see him having a Jalen Hurts type impact right away, where he didn't look like the most incredible quarterback out there last year, but you were definitely happy to pick up 25 points a game off of him. And regardless of how quickly he finds the field, I do think as soon as he does find the field, I'm willing to start him. In Superflex, I'm happy to put him in as that quarterback too, and he has an elite ceiling where he could be that Deshaun Watson. He could be that Kyler Murray or Russell Wilson early career type running to go along with a very solid arm as well.
Yeah.
So for fantasy, the ceiling is incredibly high. You already talked about how much is Dalton going to start. I would say that I will be shocked if Fields is out week one. Even if it is planned that he's going to come in like week four, week two, whatever. Week one, they play the Rams. I don't think any coach is putting Justin Fields out to go get murdered by Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald. I don't think it's happening. So even if Andy Dalton is just thrown to the wolves for week one, I think it's a minimum one game you're going to have Justin Fields sitting.
Sure.
I think it would be a dumb decision to put Fields out for week one.
I've heard a lot of takes. I haven't heard that one yet, and I totally subscribe to it. If you're a coach, the last thing you want is Fields. Your first ever NFL game, you got Aaron Donald there to body slam your ass.
Yeah,
that's absolutely fair point. And I see Dalton playing 5 to 6 games a season. I don't really like it, but I do see him playing more time than I want him to play. I've seen enough Dalton. I want to see Fields.
Of course, yeah, as do we all. Regardless, I do think when you're looking at the pass catchers on this offense, you have to look at it as a positive. I definitely prefer Justin Fields being the one throwing to him. Even if he's making rookie mistakes and throwing some interceptions, he can push the ball downfield. And when you're talking about Allen Robinson or Darnell Mooney's value for this year, regardless of which one it is an improvement from last year. Especially when you look at someone like Mooney with the role he has and the arm strength that a quarterback needs to have to get him the ball, it will only be a positive, and I expect the offense in total to progress from last year. But yes, I do look at it as the sooner Fields can get on the field, the better it will be for these guys. Allen Robinson is a wide receiver that I am absolutely in love with. He is nearing on that range where he's hitting his peak value in age. But to this point, Blake Bortles is probably the best quarterback that has thrown him the ball in his entire career. So when you're looking at the numbers he's been able to put up both in Jacksonville and on the Bears, considering the players that have been throwing the ball,
inconceivable.
He has an incredibly high ceiling that he could hit for the first time this year, because he has never had anyone even decent throwing him the ball. So with the ceiling that someone like Fields has, we could see a true breakout coming a bit later than normal in a career. And that's, you know, it's tough to say someone breaking out who's seen as like a Pro Bowl caliber wide receiver, But we could see him breach that top five in fantasy wide receivers. I truly believe that. So he's someone I'm targeting right now because I think given the fact that there aren't a lot of other target hogs around him right now and the potential for the improvement in the passing game around him, I expect this to be a very good year for Allen Robinson. And then he is playing on a franchise tag. So he will either take that season and relay it into a big contract somewhere else where, you know, at worst, it's going to be like a Kenny Golladay type situation for him. Or he'll re-sign with the Bears. Hopefully, if he's re-signing with the Bears, it's because he actually sees a lot more positive future for this team than he did throughout this offseason, where it doesn't seem like he wants to be a part of this offense.
Yeah.
And if Justin Fields takes that step forward, I could easily see him wanting to come back, wanting to be that number one. And he's going to get paid. So along with that big contract he's going to get will come a fairly locked in target share going forward.
Next up on the wide receiver list, Darnell Mooney.
Mm-hmm. Toby's talked about him recently in our Dynasty by the Week segment.
What can't I say about Darnell Mooney? I do think it's incredibly impressive, even just considering the list of names we're going to read out. Not that anyone beneath Mooney is thought of as particularly great.
I would say they're thought of as an awful wide receiving core, to be honest.
Yeah, that's... He's just managed to rise up above everyone after just 1 year. Like, I look at all the other names we're going to talk about. No one comes close to taking that wide receiver two spot. You even have what I can't wait for. Jalen Ramsey talking smack about Darnell Mooney, calling him the wide receiver two for the Bears. And
well,
I think
he is.
He is, and I don't think it's close. Darnell Mooney is not Allen Robinson, but he can get the crazy, blazing, deep shot speed and mix it in with a fairly refined route tree now, which is incredible that he's been able to do this with this, you know, low draft pick. But in terms of value, we don't really know who Dalton's going to fall in love with yet, if he's going to be coming in. Justin Fields, Darnell Mooney. I'm very, very into Darnell Mooney, and I do not think he has competition that's going to be taking away targets from him.
I think Darnell Mooney is a prospective add, but it's very dependent on value because I think his ceiling is still capped due to the role he will have and due to his physical limitations beyond speed. He did impress me with his route running and he has already surpassed all of my expectations coming out of college, but I do fear that his ceiling will be locked into a spread the defense type role where he will struggle to ever see a very big target share because guys like him who get a big target share, the list starts and ends with Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
And so that is a difficult
list to be a part of.
Yeah, like it's such an unobtainable role. It's possible. I mean, he was drafted earlier than Tyreek Hill was, so it's in the range of outcomes. But it is so difficult to be more than that, like, fringe wide receiver two and wide receiver three. And that doesn't mean that that isn't a very useful role, but the reason why I wouldn't want to pay up like crazy for him is because I'm scared that his chance of hitting that legitimate fantasy championship type winning ceiling is really, really difficult to hit. As Toby mentioned, there is a ton of guys below him that could have an impact. Anytime we have a list of like 10 guys, that usually means the depth chart isn't that good. You've got Anthony Miller, who has been a general disappointment. I don't expect him to stick around on the Bears for very long. He hasn't lived up to the expectations that we saw a couple of years ago. They drafted Daz Newsome, who is another player who...
He's exciting.
He is, but he's in that Amari Rodgers mold of that he just doesn't have the athleticism, so it's hard to see that fantasy ceiling. However, there is a possibility that he could find that like slot role on a team, I guess the team being the Bears, and if he can carve out that role for himself, he could see a pretty decent target share. So he's interesting in the really late rounds of your rookie drafts. Beneath him, they brought in Marquise Goodwin. I guess he's like a backup to Darnell Mooney for spreading the field. Damir Bird had a decent season last year on New England, so he potentially could have a role. Then you got Javon Wims, who was on the field a bit last year, and Riley Ridley, who people still seem to hold on to, but I would suggest dropping him off your roster because I think he might be the worst player of that list. So I don't think he's worth a dynasty roster spot.
Riley Ridley has his brother's name.
That's about it. That's very true. In the running back room, someone that is commonly disrespected, David Montgomery. He ended up on an absolute tear last year.
Did he ever, man.
He's a top five running back in the 2020 season, as shocking as that is, and won a lot of people championships.
He showed an explosiveness in the second half of the previous year that people did not think he had. I do not think people knew he had that next level up. He really leveled up.
Yeah, here is the two sides of it. Because with David Montgomery, usually you'd think, or at least I would think, okay, he was just a top five running back. And the reason that largely happened is because all the other running backs on his team went down. And so he was out there the whole time. And I don't think he's going to do as well as last year. But the market has also adjusted to that. No one is ranking him as a running back one.
Yeah.
So his value is still fine. It's decent. Everyone is expecting that total to go down. Just, you know, you have Tariq Cohen back. They bring in a late round pick in Khalil Herbert. They bring in Damian Williams. Clearly, they don't want to have just one guy out there the entire time like they had at the end of last year. And they did bring in Cordell Patterson every once in a while, but he was irrelevant. So David Montgomery, I don't think will ever hit the highs we just saw again in the rest of his career. But he's a very good running back too on your team. And I think he actually is probably undervalued right now in Dynasty. He is a talented enough player and will have a significant enough role that even if he will not be a top 10 running back again, he will be that consistent enough player who gets the volume that you're looking for.
Yes.
That I think he's really worth the add or buy right now.
I agree. I think the Chicago offense is about to be better.
That's true.
And I think he's now showed you what he is capable of in not even a perfect scenario, in a great scenario where he gets some blockers ahead of him and finds some green grass. David Montgomery is a much more exciting prospect to me than he was 365 days ago.
Yeah, for sure. Cole Kmet is the top tight end there. He has emerged, I would say, after only one season, which is not always what you get out of tight ends. But by the end of last year, though Jimmy Graham was still involved, Cole Kmet did start to eat in more and more. He got more playing time, he got more targets, and he got more touchdowns. Cole Kmet is one of those emergent tight ends that I'm not confident being my starter right away. But he could easily find himself in that role. It doesn't take that many weeks of him clearly establishing himself. He could be the number two target on this team. It's possible. He's not going to surpass Allen Robinson, but in terms of target share, he could surpass everyone else. It's in the range of outcomes. So those are the type of receiving rooms that I'm targeting, especially when you're talking about a young guy who got draft capital last year. And this is also an offense that does look at the tight end, not only in the red zone, but just generally. The tight end room on the Chicago Bears gets a good amount of receiving yards. One issue for just 2021 is that Jimmy Graham is still on this roster, and he may not be even a shadow of what he used to be, but he's still going to score some touchdowns. He's going to be a thorn in Cole Kmet's side the whole year. So
Jimmy Graham, there's also a point in tight ends where they're essentially too old to block. And they'll just come out for pass catching.
To be fair, Jimmy Graham has never been able to block, ever. So.
You're right. Sorry, continue.
I am definitely willing to go get Cole Kmet right now. The price is rising, and for good reason. But he appears to be a guy, even if he doesn't hit a true ceiling of being that, like, you know, top-end tight end one, I expect he'll be a usable tight end one, lower tight end one type of guy for a good amount of time, because he's a good enough receiver in a good enough situation to do so.
It's the third team up on our list. They're from Minnesota. They're the Vikings. And I think they're going to have a good year.
Yeah, they'll probably be a good team. I think they were unlucky record-wise last year, so I expect they will improve upon that.
Head coach Mike Zimmer. I think we know the Zimmer system. You got the OC being Clint Kubiak, and what Clint Kubiak brings to the offensive coordinator position, Mike Zimmer's already enforcing as head coach, largely. Yeah. I'm interested to see how much they use Dalvin Cook this year.
That's, I think, the biggest takeaway, just on a basic level looking at his offense.
Yeah.
They're going to run a lot, I would say, probably even more so than last year.
Zimmer's philosophy is run heavy, and he wants that as much as possible. If Dalvin Cook is staying healthy and being as good as we know he can be, it's going to be an insanely run-heavy team.
Yeah.
And I don't view this as bad for the wide receivers, because I feel like if their running game is operating as smoothly as they'd like, there's going to be a lot of play-action opportunities for Thielen and Jeff. I mean, that's essentially how Thielen started making his money, is just some play action where he's just beating guys and getting open. Mm-hmm.
The only other thing I'd point out with this scheme is they will be, I would expect, fairly 12 personnel heavy, meaning that there will be a lot of times where there isn't a third wide receiver out on the field, and that fits their personnel as they have a very obvious top two wide receivers. But I do expect sets with two tight ends to be fairly common for this offense. At quarterback, you've got Kirk Cousins and Kellen Mond, who was drafted this year.
Kellen.
Kirk Cousins is always underrated. Always. And has simply just produced at a very solid level for a really long time. Year in and year out, you can essentially count on him being that low end. He had three seasons where he was on Washington and he was playing behind RG3, so he was fairly irrelevant other than the fact that he would come in some games because RG3 was always hurt. But since he took over a starting role, he has finished as the quarterback 10, 5, 6, 13, 19, and 11. So
very consistent.
Very solid. 1 year at quarterback 19 isn't even that bad. And every year besides that, he's right in the top 13 quarterbacks. So that's kind of the area I expect him to be again. He's probably going to be between 10 and 15. And especially when you're talking super flex, that's like very, very valuable to have him as your second guy, to know that you can count on him and just not worry about that second quarterback spot. He is worth his price right now. I've looked down Sleeper's ADP and he is worth picking up. If you're doing a super flex startup draft right now, count on him being your number two. And if you are a quarterback needy team, go trade for him. He's totally going to be fine yet again. And the player that in the short term doesn't scare me, but may be drafted to be their long-term successor, is Kellen Mond. They took him in the early third round this year. And Kellen Mond is a decent prospect. I think he has a reasonable amount of upside. I'm not...
Rushing capabilities.
Mm-hmm, I'm not crazy about the prospect. Like, he's not someone that I was pounding the table for my favorite team to go draft. But he has enough upside that it's like, okay, it's never a bad idea to take a third round shot on a Kellen Mond. That is how Washington ended up with Kirk Cousins. You know, they took RG3 and in the same year, they're like, eh, we like the value. Let's also take Kirk Cousins. Why not? And Kirk Cousins ended up being an incredible pick, of course. And I could easily see Kellen Mond being that type of guy where you look back in a few years and you're like, sure, he wasn't the flashiest guy in college, but if you can pick up a potential starter in the third round, that is the best draft value you can possibly get on draft day. There is seemingly always some talks about Kirk Cousins not being around in a year or two, and so I would not be surprised if by the end of his contract he does move on elsewhere, and you could see Kellen Mond getting that opportunity in this offense. And although they aren't incredibly pass heavy as an offense, I would like his opportunity for fantasy. Definitely, he'd be a guy that I'd be very willing to take the shot on then. So if you're just looking at straight value, might as well wait until like halfway through this season. He's kind of forgotten about. Clearly, Kirk is the starter. And he's going to be even cheaper than he is now, which is pretty cheap. You can just pick him up, stash him on your roster, and there could easily come a day where he sees some starting time. Let's move to the wide receivers. You have the absolutely emergent Justin Jefferson.
You want to buy him? Ready to use all of your money.
Yeah, good luck. He is hard to get now.
Oh, and my goodness.
As someone who loved Justin Jefferson last year, I had him as my wide receiver 2 over Jerry Jeudy. I didn't draft him anywhere. I just didn't happen to be in the right spot, and it sucks. Because if I want him now, because of course I want him now, I love the guy.
Yeah.
I'm not getting him. He's too expensive.
Good luck.
So he absolutely emerged last year. Obviously, he ended up as a wide receiver 1 in his rookie season with a ridiculous amount of yards. And what's interesting looking at these two wide receivers is people always talk about wide receivers and running backs regressing to the mean. And Adam Thielen, his touchdown rate was an outlier, and he will likely regress to the mean, meaning that he's not going to score as many touchdowns next year as he did this year. Justin Jefferson could honestly score some more touchdowns and be even better. So it's pretty crazy to think of that as a rookie wide receiver, only 22 years old right now, and he was the wide receiver 6. He could get even better. It is crazy. But he's clearly one of those top-end wide receivers you see in startup drafts. He's going as a top 5 wide receiver at this point, and it's hard to blame anyone for doing that, because when you can produce that much as a rookie, only great things are to come. And I do expect him to be a perennial top 10 wide receiver for a very long time.
He looks like a really young AJ Green. Like, he's got this crazy frame of speed and size combo. And he's just lanky. His catch radius is unbelievable. The guy playing behind Justin Jefferson, not really behind, but...
Mm-hmm. Across from.
Across from is Adam Thielen. He's going to be behind in not even drafts. Adam Thielen, kind of as safe as it comes in terms of grabbing a wide receiver two on a team. There are some injury concerns, and yes, he's getting older.
I don't really have injury concerns. He is 30, though.
Yeah.
So he's getting up there, and he will fall off soon. He ended up as the wide receiver 10 last year, so... The number 6 and the number 10 wide receivers from this same passing offense is pretty crazy. That was on the back of 14 touchdowns, though. And that is what is very unlikely to repeat. So what's good about him, as we were saying with David Montgomery, is the market has reacted to this. No one's ranking him as a top 10 guy. Even in redraft, people aren't ranking him that high. So the value that you can currently get on Thielen, especially if you're going for the title now, you have a locked-in wide receiver too. He's not going to fall off that hard. He is still going to be heavily used in the red zone, heavily used all over the field. And you can lock him into one of those top 24 spots. And because he's 30, because people don't believe as much in the talent, and because across from him is a guy that everyone now views as the clear number one, you can get him at such a discount that I'm willing to go get him as a part of that push for the championship roster that you've built. If you're absolutely going for it, then I'm willing to go get Adam Thielen.
Yep, I agree with that advice.
Beneath him, they may not see the field that much, as we were saying, because there's such an obvious top two and we expect a lot of 12 personnel. But you've got Amir Smith-Marset.
Exciting.
Was a fifth-round pick that we quite liked. And I do think he can emerge and be this team's number three. But he's definitely a prospective add because I don't expect him to have a ton of fantasy points in year one. But he's a talented enough prospect that I'm willing to bet that the talent will eventually win out. He'll find himself on the field because when you're looking at him versus other like fifth or sixth round picks, he is one of the clear guys I'm picking out of that group. So I find myself in the late third, early fourth type range. And I'm like, okay, yeah, it's worth it to stick this guy on my taxi squad for a year because he's good enough that he can easily emerge.
Yeah, I don't mind Amir Smith-Marset as that deep shot.
Mm-hmm. Then you got Olabisi Johnson and Chad Beebe, who we kind of talked about with this with the last couple rosters. Is they're these guys, they're these Marcos Valdes-Scantling types, but not even that good.
Yeah, I think MVS is just, he's a different level. You're right. Get on the field
That's disrespectful to MVS.
I think it is, man.
These are more maybe the Marquise Goodwin, Javon Wims types. They're not going to have a fantasy impact. They're not worth the roster spot.
I was just going to argue and say Javon Wims is worse, but no, it's like the same thing.
They're both going to do
that. They're both going to be very irrelevant.
Definitely not worth any roster spot unless you're in an incredibly deep league.
For the running backs, it's more the running back. It's Dalvin Cook. Clear bell cow. It's just a question of how much he's going to be used. Because I can see him getting more touches than almost anyone in the league.
Yeah, I think he is the stock number two pick in redraft right now.
Yeah.
And that's totally based on volume. And he's the only guy across that whole first round where I don't see risk in his team situation. Because you can go down the list. McCaffrey now has a new quarterback, Darnold. That's a risk. You've got Kamara. He's got a new quarterback. You've got Zeke. Dak's coming back from injury. Saquon's coming back from injury himself. Every single player has some risk to him. Dalvin is the same as he was last year. He's in the same offense. He's going to be really good, just like he was last year.
He's so good.
Yeah, he's locked into a huge workload, but I will push back a little bit on that. He's not the only guy worth talking about in Dynasty.
Alexander Mattison.
Quite like Alexander Mattison. I think he's one of the highest handcuffs in the league, someone that I'm definitely happy to go get. In almost every opportunity he's had when Dalvin Cook has gone down, he's put up some decent fantasy points, and part of the reason why he wasn't as involved last year, which helped out Dalvin Cook, is that he did deal with some injuries of his own last year. So he's clearly not a guy that's like a Latavius Murray that's going to come in a decent amount, but he's that pure handcuff. If Dalvin Cook goes down, I'm happy to throw in Alexander Mattison as soon as that happens, right into my starting lineup. So he has that incredibly high upside. And then below Dalvin Cook and Alexander Mattison, as much as he's not someone I'm targeting, I thought it was worth pointing out that they did draft in the fourth round, which is not that bad of running back capital.
Yeah.
Kini Nwangwu? Probably butchered it, but that guy. And supposedly he is billed as a special team specialist. So he's going to be that return guy. Very useful in that role, but it's fourth round capital. You don't usually spend that type of capital on someone that you just see in that role, just a special teams guy. So it is definitely possible to me that he could come in. He's just that explosive dude who wasn't my favorite prospect. I looked into his tape after the draft because he wasn't really on my radar until he went in the fourth round. And I was like, oh, okay, I gotta look into this guy. And he doesn't have a lot of what I'm looking for in terms of like vision and footwork and all that, but he does have enough burst. Obviously, you can see it with his return skills that they might want to use him creatively, maybe like a Tariq Cohen, where it's possible he's getting some sweeps and being used as a pass catcher or whatever. That there is a realistic possibility when a team goes out and takes their fourth round capital and spends it on a running back, you need to pay a little bit of attention that they might have a plan for this guy. So I think he's at least worth monitoring.
Yeah, I think so too.
Questions have been raised about the Vikings tight end room these last couple of weeks. You have Irv Smith and Tyler Conklin. And so I think everyone presumed, you know, Rudolph is out and Irv Smith, it's your time to rise up.
As the resident Irv Smith Jr. lover,
uh-huh,
I was very excited for this year.
I think you still can be.
I am, but less so. Because please continue this narrative.
So then Mike Zimmer comes out and says that, well, we don't think that Rudolph's absence will really change Irv Smith's role too much. We see a very big role for Tyler Conklin, and we think that he can soak up a lot of that role that we had for Kyle Rudolph previously. And that took a lot of people by surprise because Tyler Conklin hasn't really been that involved as of yet, whereas Irv Smith seems like the very clear incumbent into that main tight end role. So the role has become a lot more murky now because Irv Smith went from one of those clear breakout candidates to now you can be a little bit concerned that maybe they're going to split that tight end target share between the two and leave neither of them with as much fantasy upside, or potentially maybe Conklin will even be the guy to own on this team.
I do not want to say that Conklin's the guy to own because I don't want him to be. But I don't think Irv Smith Jr. is going to have a breakout year in the NFL this year. Mm. And I would love him to be. I just feel that he has had the exact same skill set for multiple years. And he was not able to beat out Kyle Rudolph. Maybe it's just because of 12 personnel. And they're going to be running two tight ends all the time. Maybe it's just because he doesn't have the coach's trust. Or he's not able to get enough separation in terms of him and other tight ends. Whatever it may be. I am worried that he's a little bit overvalued right now. And I love him. I totally understand why other people like him as a prospect. But I begin to hesitate when I see him.
Mm-hmm. I think my biggest fear is that when this team is passing, Kirk Cousins is fairly locked onto his two elite wide receivers. Sensibly so.
Yeah.
And the one area where we saw the tight ends have a lot of value is in the red zone. And so my fear with Irv Smith is that he's pretty small for a tight end. And Conklin actually isn't huge either, but he's bigger than Irv Smith. Irv Smith is one of the smallest tight ends that you see with a significant role around the league. So it is possible the way that they used Kyle Rudolph in those jump ball touchdown scenarios where that's really all his role was last year. Maybe just those are the packages they see using Conklin instead. So Irv Smith might still be the move tight end where he's going to get a decent amount of yards, but I think where most of the fantasy value comes from this offense is going to be in that red zone, and if Conklin's stealing away those touchdowns,
then Irv's got some issues.
It'll be very hard for him to have that true breakout and be that starter for fantasy. They also drafted in the fifth round, I believe, Zach Davidson, who is the type of developmental tight end that is worth it in a deep league, especially if you're in tight end premium, that down the line he could have a decent amount of value, but I don't expect him to see any work this year, and he would be a little bit even hard-pressed to see work in the next couple years unless Irv Smith and Tyler Conklin really don't work out, which is possible. These aren't established guys, so sure, I'd be happier with those guys in front of him than being in San Francisco for something like that. Davidson is definitely worth that very deep stash, especially, as I said, in tight end premium, but he is lower on my list for sure. Like, we did our rankings of all the rookies and he didn't quite make that list. And I don't think he would even make that top 48 in a tight end premium league. He's going to be more that fifth or sixth pick that's like, you have to be in a fairly deep league to really be worth stashing Zach Davison for a year or two.
I would agree with that.
Let's move on to the final team in this division and a team that is very intriguing to me. Sure, I don't think they're going to be that good.
No.
But I think they're going to be kind of fun.
Detroit Lions.
And it starts off with Dan Campbell, one of the most fun personalities in the league. What do you think of Dan Campbell, Toby? You told me that you went back and watched the little YouTube docuseries on him a little bit. I've watched the same things. Yeah, what impression do you have of Dan Campbell as a head coach?
I think he shows some similarities, pretty obviously, between John Gruden. he has gone out, in terms of just fantasy impact, he's been very adamant that he's not going to be running any one particular system. He's not running any one particular system. He's seen them all. He wants to just get his best guys the ball. Sure, you know, that does make sense. However, I have some questions if he's like, I don't want to run any one particular system. That strikes me as somewhat worrisome, especially for a quarterback like Goff, who I feel like a system would really benefit him, especially wide receivers, for example, that are not elite talents. I would go as far as saying no one on the Lions is an elite talent apart from...
I think he got two.
Apart from Jared Goff and...
Not Goff. He's not one of my two.
I'd have DeAndre Swift.
DeAndre Swift and Hawkinson. TJ Hawkinson. Hawkinson. Yeah.
Fair. Totally fair. I would be surprised if this was not a run-heavy type of offense. Mm-hmm. I suspect it will be run-heavier than it has been in the past just because of kind of the coach speech of Campbell.
Yeah.
But I'm really not too sure what to expect from him. And I'm worried about the outlook of Goff, I would say.
That's totally fair. One thing that's important to remember just in terms of fantasy is that Anthony Lynn has been brought in as the OC. He will also be the play caller. So we've seen Anthony Lynn. We know that type of offense. We saw it on the Chargers the last few years. So I think there's some immediate comparisons you can make from Eckler to Swift, from Hunter Henry to Hawkinson.
Sure.
Even Philip Rivers from few years, obviously not last year, to Jared Goff. I think they could be used in a very similar way, you know, getting the ball quickly out of the hands of the quarterback. That not only suits what you would see out of Philip Rivers, but also what would most benefit someone like Jared Goff.
They prove me wrong. Great. I'm happy to see Jared Goff succeed. I don't know. This is a gut feeling that I've been having ever since I've started watching this. I'm worried about Jared.
Mm-hmm. That's totally fair. One thing that is absolutely in their favor as well before we get into the skill position stuff is that this might be the best offensive line in the league. They're that good.
Hmm.
They're going to be one of the top five O-lines, you know, projected. Anything can happen. But it's almost an interesting case study to me of like so much importance is put on the O-line. Well, here is an example where you don't really have weapons. You don't necessarily have an elite quarterback, but you do have an elite O-line. So how much can decent weapons with a decent quarterback get done if they're given a lot of time by their O-line? That's going to be very interesting for me to watch play out. But that will definitely help Jared Goff, who is their starting quarterback. And Jared Goff is just one of those, probably want him as your quarterback three that you can bring in on bye weeks and stuff. It's tough to be relying on him as your quarterback two, even in Superflex. But I do think he's a little bit undervalued. I expect that he is going to be the starter for a couple of years. The one scenario that could happen is they could be awful enough to have an incredibly early pick. And then next year it would be him and a potential, you know, first overall pick type starting quarterback. So that is, I think, how he could lose his job. Behind Jared Goff, you have David Blow, who is a fine backup, but it's not an explosive offense, so it's not really someone I'm heavily targeting. But in a deep league, if he ever gets in there, he'll run a bit and be somewhat fantasy relevant. Then let's talk about their wide receivers, because there's no clear established wide receiver one on this team. You have Amon-Ra St. Brown, which is very weird to be talking about a fourth round rookie first.
Maybe we're totally wrong.
Oh, and he could be irrelevant this year. It's totally possible.
But I think he's the best wide receiver on the roster.
he easily could end up with the most targets of any wide receiver on this team. He's probably going to be that slot role. That's how I envision him being used most effectively for his skill set. He's not that hyper-athletic guy at all. He doesn't have a ton of speed, but he has amazing footwork. He is very good at running routes, and he can get open and be that underneath guy. And we know that Jared Goff likes to target that underneath guy. You also have Breshad Perriman, who was brought over from the New York Jets, the Baltimore Ravens of previous years, and a relative draft bust, but a useful NFL wide receiver. He's going to be one of those outside roles. He's got some good speed. It's tough to see him or any of these wide receivers, in my opinion, being that true, incredibly useful dynasty asset, though, especially just looking at this year. I think a lot needs to change for them to be that high-end wide receiver that you're really excited to start every week.
I could see Perriman taking the number one role kind of for at least for the first quarter of the season.
I could easily see that happening. He could probably be my odds on favorite to be the number one this year.
If he starts blowing up, sell.
Trade him.
Sell. Because I think that he will be good for an NFL team in short stints, and then he's going to get phased out and there's going to be better options. So I think just for Perriman, if he just remarkably goes, whoa, first three games he's on fire, I'd start the move.
That's fair. That's also how I feel about Tyrell Williams, who's probably going to start on the other side if he does start to blow up to me. Tyrell Williams is someone that I feel like I look back at his career and think that he was a lot more fantasy relevant than he was. He has one season that was better than the wide receiver 46, and that was in 2016. And it's not like he's been missing a lot of games other than obviously last year he opted out. He's just only had one good season ever. So it's been a long time. It's been 5 years since we've seen him even be relevant. So it's really hard to bank on him suddenly exploding. And I agree, if he has like one good week, I'm going to try to get what I can for Tyrell Williams. Then last year, their sixth round pick, Quintez Cephas, was at one point the only wide receiver on this roster. He is probably competing with Amon-Ra St. Brown to be that slot guy, but I could see him converting to a more outside role as well. He's not someone that I see as having a ton of value, especially because he couldn't really find the field last year. But because of this lacking depth chart, any of these guys is worth a shot to just see if they emerge. And then you can quickly pivot off early in the season if they're not being relevant. Then the next group of guys as well, because this is a weak depth chart, you got to mention all these dudes. You got Geronimo Allison. I doubt he's going to do anything, but he has in the past a little bit. Chad Hansen, if you remember him from the Texans last year, in stints, he proved that he can be a decent NFL wide receiver.
Yeah.
And Sage Surratt was a undrafted rookie that we quite liked preseason. And he is that outside jump ball specialist type player. In terms of undrafted free agent wide receivers that I'm really interested in, he's quite high on the top of my list. Because I think when you're looking at that role, those outside wide receivers on this team, he doesn't have a lot of stiff competition. And we like the talent to begin with. So if you're looking at just undrafted guys that's worth a shot, I would say he's pretty high on that list for me.
He could have that magical camp and a couple injury bugs that get him out on the field and he finds his way. And it's not impossible.
It's totally possible. It could happen. At running back, DeAndre Swift.
He's the man.
And he's in line to see just as many targets as potentially anyone else on this team. And that's why he's so exciting to me. I don't think it's going to be a prolific offense. I don't think he's going to be rushing for a ton of yards and scoring a ton of touchdowns on the ground. But I do think because of the way that fantasy points are scored in these PPR dynasty leagues, he's going to put up a lot of points on receptions alone. So the fact that I see him used a lot in the screen game, and sure, he's likely to be splitting with Jamal Williams because I think Jamal Williams will have a significant role as well. But when you have a player that has the skill set of Swift, because he is a very good rusher, he is a very good receiver, and you can very clearly envision him in that role. Like I said, Anthony Lynn, you saw it with Austin Eckler. They can focus an offense around that pass-catching running back. That's why there's so much hype for Swift right now. My fear is that I think the hype is a little bit too high right now. And there are other running backs going around his range. Talked about him a lot in recent episodes, but someone like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I think the upside is there more with CEH right now. So I am a bit against consensus in that I don't have Swift ranked quite as high as some of these other guys. I would still be taking CEH over someone like DeAndre Swift. on the opposite end of the spectrum, I think Jamal Williams is a little bit undervalued because I think he will be out on the field a lot as well. He is a useful pass catcher. He also is a very good pass protector. So I could see him finding his way onto a decent amount of third downs, and that will be very annoying if you have DeAndre Swift. He was signed to a 2-year, $6 million contract, which in terms of running backs, that is the type of contract of someone that will be relevant on your offense. They brought him in because they want to use him. And this, when you're looking at both Dan Campbell, who came from that Saints offense, you're looking at Anthony Lynn, who came from that Chargers offense, they're not using a bell cow. I think it's incredibly unlikely. And Jamal Williams will have that 40% minimum role to me. So that will be a big thorn in DeAndre Swift's side, but he'll be relevant. And I think if either of these two guys goes down, that's when you could see a ton of fantasy points as they can soak up that extra bit of target share and rushing share. So that's really when I think either one of these guys could truly explode, as if you see an injury.
Yeah.
Then in the seventh round, they also drafted Jamar Jefferson, who is not someone I would say we loved coming out of this draft, especially not Toby, but he was a notable member of this running back class, and I think him falling all the way to the seventh round was a bit of a surprise. He's kind of that all-round type of running back that I do expect, in that case where Swift or Jamal Williams goes down, he could step into that backup role. But we were just talking about it with Kylan Hill on the Green Bay Packers. It's very similar. When you're looking at these seventh round running backs, they don't have a ton of opportunity on their own. And I do think in a very similar way, if you have him on your dynasty roster, you're just banking on an injury in front of him. And then you're banking on him taking the opportunity that he has and running with it.
I'm not surprised he fell to the seventh round just because of how much I didn't like his tape. But you are right that he's going to a run heavy offense and he's got a chance.
Mm-hmm. He just needs that opportunity, yep. For sure. TJ Hockenson is my favorite player on this team to go for yep. Sure. He's going to be my tight end 4 once we go ahead with our tight end dynasty rankings in a few weeks. TJ Hockenson, I expect to soak up a huge amount of target share. I think he will be the number one most targeted player on this team, with DeAndre Swift being number 2, to be honest. And when you're judging him against so many other tight ends across the league, I just expect the target share for him to receive, paired with the talent that he has. Obviously, he was a top 10 draft pick only a couple years ago and broke out in the 2020 season. He's proved it to me that he is a good enough tight end and is in a good enough situation that he deserves to be ranked up at the top. And we were talking last week about Kyle Pitts. And the reason why I want TJ Hockenson over Kyle Pitts is because there's still an incredibly high ceiling with Hockenson, as well as I know this guy's floor. I know he's going to be relevant, a big part of this offense. So I just want the guy that I know is going to get a pretty high target share.
TJ Hockenson has proven, not for long consistent stretches yet, but has proven that he can be a fantastic force at the tight end position. Could this be the year? Jared Goff likes his tight ends. I'm mm-hmm. very hopeful.
Yeah, I think it totally could happen that he's just hyper-targeted. Then they also brought in Darren Fells, which honestly was something that slipped my radar. I didn't even know he was a part of this roster until I was looking it up for this episode. He's that type of guy who's going to sneak his way into the end zone for a couple touchdowns a year, but he will not be heavily used in this offense, I don't expect.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of that Mercedes Lewis, but just a little bit more like we were talking earlier. That's kind of the role I expect to see Darren Fells in. That's it, though. That is the 4 teams of the NFC North, and therefore every team in the NFL we have now gone through over the past 8 weeks. And that's the end of this divisional deep dive series. Of course, we still have a lot to get to in this offseason. We're going to go through all of our startup rankings. We're going to get into a little bit of redraft before the NFL season starts. And then it's going to be the start of the NFL season, so we're definitely excited about that. But before we close this episode out, as always, we've got a Dynasty Buy of the Week. It is my turn to give the hints, and if you're interested in how this game works, just look in the description below. Toby, here is going to be your hint number 1.
I'm ready.
This offseason, this player signed a 2-year, $10 million contract.
2-year, 10 mil, James Conner.
Not James Conner. Second hint is this player has a current startup ADP in single quarterback
mm-hmm.
of
139,
which makes him the running back 45.
Okay. $10 million for the RB 49. that strikes me
45.
Sorry, as the RB 45 strikes me as a more money than I would expect. Gus Edwards.
It is Gus Edwards. Good job. Yep, makes a lot of sense. Eh? Yeah. He got paid more than you would expect. Good backup money.
Yes.
The rest of my hints are that last year he finished as an RB3, even though he only caught 8 passes in the 16 games he played.
Wow.
Very few. Then he was a clear handcuff behind one of the stud sophomore running backs, and he plays in the most rush-heavy offense in the league.
Mm-hmm.
So Gus Edwards, I just believe at this point, is too undervalued. Him going in with the 139th pick obviously puts him in the 14th round currently in startup drafts. And at that point, he is just all upside to me. He has a very safe floor because this offense rushes so much. He has a clearly defined role that is the backup role, very obviously, behind J.K. Dobbins. But it's enough of a role in a prolific enough offense that is going to run a ridiculous amount again this year that even without a J.K. Dobbins injury, he will be very relevant. I could easily see him sneaking into that running back 2 category, especially if he increases his receptions on the year up from 8 to maybe 20. And what we've seen out of Gus Edwards so far in his career is that he is a good running back. He has a high yards per rush every year of his career. Last year it was 5.0. He was just getting chunk plays almost all the time. And J.K. Dobbins actually led the league in yards per rush last year, but Gus Edwards was top 10 as well. That's just what this offense is going to do, is whoever's out there is going to be able to run because defenders have to deal with Lamar running the opposite way and they're going to look over at him too. Gus Edwards will be a useful player no matter what this year. He's not someone that you're looking to start on a week-to-week basis if J.K. Dobbins is there, but injuries happen, not only to J.K., but to the rest of your roster, and if you're forced into a Gus Edwards start here and there, that's fine. And if J.K. Dobbins goes down, Gus Edwards is a running back 1, in my opinion. He's just going to be out there almost the whole time. He's going to rush like crazy. He's going to have Derrick Henry numbers. So that is the type of upside that I want, especially deep in a draft. I think he's absolutely worth the price. So he is a dynasty buy for me this week.
I don't mind that. Any part of the Ravens running game at the moment, you have to put respect on that.
And he didn't have a ton of work last year, but let's be real that
Mark Ingram's gone.
Mark Ingram is gone. And that is extra rushing share that both he and J.K. Dobbins will probably eat into this year. So yeah, I actually also like J.K. Dobbins right now. I think he's fallen to a decent value, but to me, the screaming value is with Gus Edwards.
Fair.
That's it, everyone. That is our 67th episode of the Deep Dive Dynasty Podcast. As always, keep up with everything we've got going on Twitter, at Deep Dive Dynasty. And seriously, all you listeners on Apple Podcasts, next week, I want to be reading out one of your reviews. So
please,
scroll down there and just write me some. I'm going to read it out. Why not?
A little bit.
Yeah, just do it just for us. Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll talk to you again next week, of course. Thank you for being here, Toby.
Thank you.
And have a good one, everybody.
Peace.